Warning. The following broadcast you're about to listen to is filled to the brim with explicit adult language and content. Don't like it? Don't listen to it. Don't complain about it. Just ignore it. If you like it or don't mind it, then listen up and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Regimental Vox, a podcast dedicated to all things Warhammer and wargaming in general. I am your host and Vox operator for the evening, Caleb Meyer. It is Monday, April 26, 2021. I almost forgot what month it is. Yes, I did. This is episode 86. I initially was planning to actually get into the first part of my Drukhari Codex review thing, like not just the intro, but the actual official thing today. But we're going to go over something else, and then next week it is going to begin. So, if you're really interested in the Drukhari Codex, I've been kind of digging in a little deeper and stuff. And while I was ready to start recording it this week, I wanted to do a different topic. But anywho, let's go ahead and start off with what's new in my neck of the woods. Well, actually, that's what we're going to talk about after the break, primarily. Krista and I have a copy of Cursed City at this point. So I wanted to discuss some first impression things, things I like, things I don't like, etc. Keep in mind, first impressions. So, you know, as time goes on, we may find that I like it more, or I end up hating it, or what else, you know, whatever else, but yeah. So, beyond that, honestly, that's what we've been primarily doing as far as hobbying goes, is, really focusing on Cursed City. So, so let's go ahead and just, jump straight into the newsy bits there. Like I said, not much to discuss there. So, there's also not a whole lot to discuss in the newsy bits section because of GW's whole pre-order hiatus, but we're going to go over a couple things here quick. For starters, on the note of the pre-order hiatus, I believe they are ending that hiatus on... I'm going to keep saying the word hiatus. I'm not going to come up with a different word, apparently. They're going to end this brief interruption to their pre-order scheduling, I believe, on May 8th? Yes, May 8th is when that will begin. With the release of Necromunda Hive War, I've not decided yet if I want to get the Hive War box set. I've not been able to try Necromunda. I've really been wanting to, but, you know, I'm already balls deep into this Cursed City stuff. Plus, I've got a backlog that is just massive of things to play and game and build, etc. And but we'll see. So they got that coming up here very shortly. They did show off two new models today, which is kind of interesting, because of they have a whole big thing coming up next week, which we'll go over in a moment. But they did show off something for Age of Sigmar and something for 40K. For Age of Sigmar, there is a new Sylvaneth hero character, the Warsong Revenant. At least I presume it's a hero character and stuff. I can't imagine them making some, you know, fancy-looking duder that's not. He's got a flute, and he's not afraid to use it. So, it's a really badass-looking model, actually. Very dynamic, lots of flow to it. Lots of spindly bits that you could break. The only thing that I think this is super nitpicky, but he's got this tree crown thing behind him, but it's got all these weird little egg things popping out the top of it. And admittedly, I don't even know what those things are right off the top of my head. They just look like some little bug beetle-y things. A lot of people thought this had something to do with like ambles and stuff, because it was part of the rumor engine before, but apparently it's part of this model. And yeah, it looks a little out of place in my opinion compared to the rest of the model. I feel like it could have done without that, but that's just me. But yeah, but overall, I think it's a very cool model in general. So, but they did show off one other one for 40K. There is a new special character / reliquant at arms. Well, that's the name of the thing, the generic version of it, I think. At least from what I could tell, it sounds like there's like a generic one, the way they've described it in this article. But yeah, so it's going to be this chick carrying around this giant banner. I think she looks pretty cool. I've seen a lot of people bitching and moaning and complaining already, though, between A, the head sculpt, which I'll admit the head sculpt does look a little weird in the one picture. One of them she has a helmet, one of them she doesn't. And actually, from both pictures that I've seen, they both have something weird going on, just different weirdness. The one without the helmet, she's got her eyes closed, which I'm not used to that. Whether that's done with intent to, you know, like, because she is, like, yelling or whatever, so maybe she's got her eyes closed while she's yelling, I guess. I don't know. It's just kind of weird when you're not used to that. And then the one with the helmet, you can still see her face because the helmet is open, but the way they painted it makes it look like she's blind or has little, has like reverse eyes, basically. Like, her eyes are black, but they have white pupils. It's hard to tell in the pictures. But yeah, those are some odd choices there. Beyond that, though, the rest of the model looks incredible, in my opinion. But once again, the internet is bitching like crazy. Namely because, you know, an army that doesn't need a new thing getting a new thing. Well, quite frankly, A, I like getting new things for any army. And B, I don't think the Adeptus Sororitas are, you know, that overwhelmed and inundated with shit that they can't have more shit. It seems to me like GW really wants to flesh out their codex. And personally, I think one of the biggest things it's missing is a troops choice. It really needs another troops choice to go with the Battle Sisters, you know. So, you know, and maybe that new close combat squad is going to be their other troops choice. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But it does feel weird to me that, you know, your obligatory troops choice options are so limited in this codex cell. But we'll see how it ends up panning out in the long run. But yeah, the internet bitching that they're getting something they don't need, and they don't like the pose, they don't like this, they don't like that. You know, like I said, I'm nitpicking here about the head sculpt and stuff. I think it's actually still a good sculpt, even with the head. It's just the only part that I think is a little off. And it could be, you know, some people mentioned it could be another case of a bad paint job, which, admittedly, GW has been really bad about that in the past year or so. It's the paint job is well done, but it has weird aesthetic choices in the way they painted it. And that they've done that for, like I said, the past year or so, where there's some things that you're like, ooh, I don't know, that doesn't look very good. And then you get it in person or see someone else's paint job and stuff, and you're like, oh, even if it's like, you know, not painted to the same quality standard, it still looks better because of their aesthetic choices. But I digress. So, and then beyond that, the biggest thing is that there's going to be Warhammer Fest. But because of the fact that there's the whole, you know, COVID pandemic thing going on, still, despite everything, they're going to do it online. It's going to be Monday the 3rd through Saturday the 8th. Each day they're going to be showing off some new stuff. As to how much and how long they plan to release stuff each day, you know, whether it's going to be, you know, just a quick little blurb on the community page, or if there's going to be a whole big, you know, live video stream thing. I don't know. So we'll have to see. It doesn't say anything here. But for the schedule, on the 3rd, you have Age of Sigmar. On the 4th, you have Warhammer 40K. The 5th is the Black Library. 6th is the boxed games. So maybe we'll get some sort of fucking answer about Curse City shit. But we'll get into that once again. 7th is more 40K. It even says here, again, seriously, we have a lot. And then the 8th is a mystery. So, yeah. I find it kind of interesting that they showed off these two new characters today when they have the Warhammer Fest going on next week. It seems a weird choice, but yeah. But yeah, other than that, once again, there's just not a whole lot to discuss news-wise. I did see online, though, this past weekend at a lot of GTs, Drew Carey did just run away with the GTs for the most part. I think as far as all the majors and the major events went, I think they said they took about a third of them, which when you consider the amount of factions in the game is impressive that a whole third of a weekend's worth of GTs is run by the same faction. But it's a very popular faction at the moment. There's some particular things that, once again, I wanted to discuss, namely the Reavers thing, for those who are familiar. For those who aren't, you can check it out next week. Like I said, we're going to talk about it then. Unless something goes wrong, that is my plan. Beyond that, that's it for the newsy bits. So we're going to take a quick break. When I come back from the break, we're going to talk about those first impressions of Curse City. Talk a little bit of follow-up as well from my episode last week about this weird disappearance of Curse City. So, stay tuned. Welcome back to the Regimental Vox. So we're going to go over my first impressions once again of Curse City. But before we do that, I did want to do a little follow-up on what we were talking about last week, which was this whole weird fucking Cursed City disappearance debacle. There's no new news, okay, for starters, which sucks. It's really weird that it's been, you know, a week and a half now since it started, and still not word fucking one from GW on the who, what, where, when, why of this whole situation. They still have not deleted all traces of the game from the internet. I mean, obviously they can only go so far as that goes, but they still have the Curse City website. Admittedly, I haven't checked like in the past 10 minutes or anything like that. We're going to pull that up right now. We're going to see if that is still a thing or not. And yeah, the website still exists. So, who knows? It's kind of weird. But anywho, I'm getting sidetracked now. No new news in the regards to what the fuck the problem is with this whole situation. But reading a few things, I'm pretty sure I mentioned this last week about them updating their software systems and stuff. Maybe I didn't. I honestly don't remember. But they've been doing this for over a year. I'm pretty sure I brought it up. I'll just do a quick summary in case I did bring it up. And if I didn't, then I'll make an addendum next week, I guess. I need to start listening to my previous episodes before I record the next one. Duly noted. Anywho, they're updating some software shit that started early last year. Pandemic hit in the middle of doing this update. The software is a part of their whole logistics and supply chain thing. It's still not done. It's totally fucked up and everything else. And so the company's just collapsing in on itself in terms of its logistics and supply chain situation because of that software. But, and then there's the whole Brexit thing, tariffs, and all this jazz, Suez Canal. We went over a whole bunch of that shit last week, I know. But there is something else that I had actually seen since I last recorded. There is a shortage of the oil products used to make plastic. So, yeah, in turn, it's hard to get a hold of plastic. And last I checked, GW uses a lot of plastic. So, that seems to be a big problem. And that, you know, not just for GW, but for automakers and all sorts of other stuff. I would assume it's a global issue. The article I read was very much UK-centric. It did mention a few other countries that were talking, you know, like a few different people from different companies or whatever. But all of the people that they interviewed in this thing were European. So, yeah, you know, but I would presume it's a global thing if they're having problems in any country that normally has access to that shit, then probably everyone's having trouble. But, anywho, but still, no actual full-on information explaining what the fuck is going on. So, we're going to drop that portion for right now. We're going to talk about first impressions. So, and I'm going to make some comparisons with our experience with Blackstone Fortress as well. You know, once again, the good, the bad, the ugly sort of situation here. My overall first impression is that it's really fucking badass. It is a really fun game. We've had a fuck ton of fun with it, and we've only had it for a few days at this point. A few days since we started being able to play it after we built the shit for it. So, but yeah, it's a really cool game. So there, episode done. We're gonna actually get a little further into it than just it's cool. So as far as mechanically speaking goes, I would say relative, because I never played the older ones, so I can't compare it to like Silver Tower or anything like that. But comparing it directly to Blackstone Fortress, I would say that this is definitely the far more streamlined game. It is far more polished. It still manages to be far more complicated, though, in a lot of ways than Blackstone Fortress. The main thing is that Blackstone, for those unfamiliar with specifics on it and stuff, most of the time you build a deck out of 8 cards, okay? 8 encounter cards. There's 4 challenge cards and 4 combat cards. You shuffle those together, and that gives you your expedition deck. So when you go on an expedition, you go ahead and you draw the top card and you do what it says. If it's a challenge, you do the challenge. If it is a combat, you lay out the combat and fight the dudes and do the thing. So, and that's right off the bat. That's one thing that I guess it's a mixed thing as far as how I feel about it with Curse City. Curse City is very much, gives you multiple choices essentially. Rather than you drawing this combat card, fighting the dudes until you get to the elevator and calling it a day, which can be, I mean, hell, when we were playing Blackstone Fortress, once we got near the end, particularly after we had beaten all of the stronghold missions and it was just time to go to the hidden vault, we didn't bother like doing any of the discovery markers to find Archaeotech or anything like that. We just literally just ran to the closest portal and, you know, finished the combat. There were times where it took, you know, maybe like 20 minutes or so. Other times it was a couple minutes and that was it. So we really like flew through it. The game kind of got to a point where it didn't really give us a real reason or drive to keep actually doing fights and try to kill stuff. So Blackstone kind of falls a little flat in those regards. Whereas Curse City, every single, like, at least so far when we've played it, rather than flying through multiple combats and stuff, most nights we've only played one game of Cursed City, and that has taken several hours. Now, mind you, we're still losing. Well, yeah, we're doing that too. We'll get into that. We're still learning the rules, so that slows us down quite a bit. And of course, GW could not help themselves but write things in such a specific fashion that, you know, you can easily say A is B, B is C, but C is not D. You know, it gives you very explicit instructions. So then when you run into a rule that suddenly doesn't explicitly describe the differences, it becomes a bit of an interpretive clusterfuck. Namely, in the Deliverance missions, you don't draw new hostile groups and stuff to reinforce the battlefield with new enemies. Instead, when you add a board tile, you add a card to the end of the combat track to represent the hostile group on that board tile. And it does tell you, if you've already got four hostiles on there, ignore any others that you would have to put down. Okay, seems simple enough, but it doesn't tell you at any point. It specifically tells you, do not use the normal, you know, driven off reinforcement crap. Instead, it gives you a very explicit instruction to, you know, add new hostile groups. But it also tells you that once the combat track has four groups, you don't add any more. Like, that's just the maximum. The problem is then, if you keep adding cards the way it is written, you'll eventually have four groups that have no hostiles in it, and you can't replace them because you've hit the end of the track. Which makes no sense. So the way we've been playing it so far, in the way that we think is what they meant anyways, is to remove the card still if everything is dead, and put a new card out to represent the new threat at the end of the combat track, you know, and go from there. Now, and even then, when you wipe them out, you don't immediately replace them. It's not until you get a new board tile that has an enemy group. So, yeah, it just makes far more logical sense. But once again, because they have very specific wording on so many things, then you run into this thing that's like, all right, it says, ignore the normal rules, don't do this, don't do that, go ahead and add a new hostile. But it doesn't say anything about removing the card initially. It just says to add a new hostile to the end of the combat track. Which means if you've already got four cards out, then you can't add new shit. It even specifies that you know, if there's no room, you don't put it on the combat track. You just move on. But then, in that case, if you wiped them out, you still couldn't move the card out of there to put new ones in. So, yeah. So, clearly, I would say that's, at least in my opinion, an oversight. But, yeah, you know, that still is, you know, nitpicky. But there are other things in the rule book that are like that whole, well, did they mean it this way or do they mean it this way? Because this way doesn't make logical sense, but it is the way that it's worded. This other way sounds more logical, but is not the way it is worded. So, I think I've mentioned it before. My wife is quite the English and grammar aficionado. She has, you know, she learned a lot of how language works and stuff in school. So when she reads rules that are poorly written, that have vague interpretations and stuff, it really pisses her off. Because she understands that this could have been a lot more accurate and a lot more descriptive and solve everybody's problems, but no. But overall, still pretty good. The rules are pretty interesting for the most part. There's three different mission types, hunt, scavenge, and deliverance. We have not done a scavenge mission yet, so I can't, you know, speak about that one, but we've done a couple different hunts, and we did do a deliverance mission, or journey, they call them. We did do that last night. We got absolutely raffle stomped. It was sad and pathetic. It is really sad and pathetic, actually. But that's because we did start off with a ridiculously powerful enemy. The main boss villain dude, Radikar the Wolf, was in our deliverance journey because of some damn event roll that we had in the previous journey. So, but anywho, the deliverance ones are really interesting, but they're very complicated because you're constantly deleting a room while adding on two rooms to the end of it, end of the track and stuff. It's easier to see than it is to explain verbally. I've described it to some people as thinking about like those old school or like the old Mario levels where the map keeps moving forward. So if you don't move with it and you get stuck somewhere, you die. And that's exactly how this works, is old board tiles are getting ripped up off the table and tossed aside. And if you're still in that board tile when that happens, you will suffer injury. It's just an automatic damage. You can't defend against it or anything like that. So that makes it really crazy, and really suspenseful, very dramatic, etc. We got absolutely annihilated doing that. The hunt missions are more just straight up and down, go kill shit, specifically enemy champions, which brings me to my first my first real nitpick, I guess, with the game. It's a little more than a nitpick, admittedly, but my first negative thing I have to say about it is the way that reinforcements and stuff work can make the game slow way down as far as the action is concerned. The game can slow way down and you can be left with a whole bunch of characters with literally nothing to do but stand there, playing with themselves. And it just gets a little tedious and boring in very short bursts, mind you, because something else will pop up. It just takes some time just some turns that you're not doing anything. I do feel like this may potentially be an intentional game design to make you take little breaks between hostile groups, because the hunt missions, the way you complete them is by killing enemy champions. In order to kill an enemy champion, you need a hostile group that has a champion to show up and kill them. And also, too, unlike Blackstone, where enemies always come out closer to you when possible, and so on and so forth, with these hunt missions, because you're trying to go out of your way to kill an enemy so that you can win the journey, they spawn as far away as possible. So the game is deliberately trying to make you drag out the time, namely because there's this whole nightfall timer thing where once it reaches nighttime, all the enemies become more powerful and stuff. So I kind of get that too, that they want to drag it out, make it harder, make it take longer, so that way you have to end up hitting nighttime and get fucked. But that sounded really weird out of context. Get wrecked might be a better choice, because get fucked suggests something completely different. Not in all contexts, but anywho, I digress about the great fuckery. If it is an intentional design choice, I do feel like it is still a poor design choice. Because anytime you're taking action away from the player, you know, that you're literally telling them there's nothing to do on this board right now, so this entire turn is a waste. It just feels bad, you know. It just does the feel badsies. Once you wipe a group out, or they're quote unquote driven off, as it says, you will take their card, discard it, you'll put another one face down on that, and that's to my understanding, and once again, there might be some rules things that we're getting wrong here, but that's based on when they next activate. So if that grouping is already activated this turn, then their card still chills out. And then when the next turn comes around, then you discard that card and put one face down. And then you have to wait for their next activation to actually flip the card over and deploy those things. Once again, in the case of the hunt missions, as far from the, you know, the heroes as possible. And then they do an advance, so they just move a couple spaces and that's it. So, yeah, it's... You can find yourself going two or three turns of barely doing literally anything. You know, whereas Blackstone was pretty good about keeping action constantly going. This has it in very small spurts that really takes something away from that. So it is something I do not care for about the game's design. But once again, maybe we're doing something wrong. I personally feel like I think it would be a better idea to basically make it so that enemies, if you wipe out a group, then yeah, then go ahead and do that whole thing. But I think you should, once the group gets wiped out, then you should ditch the card, put a new one face down, maybe, and then on their next activation, then flip it and do all that, instead of wait for their next activation to actually ditch the card and stuff. Just do it right whenever they get wiped out. So maybe they haven't even activated yet that turn, in which case the new group will activate later that same turn and they will, you know, like pop up and start doing their whole thing. Or, you know, automatic reinforcements, that that all slain hostiles from that group do get reinforced automatically, except for maybe not the champions, since the champions is how you get more points on your quest. So that would make it rather interesting and far more difficult if you had to kill every fucking thing in that group in order to actually replace it with a group. And you might even get a group that doesn't have champions. The Deadwalker zombies do not have any champion models. So you might end up just being in a shitty situation regardless. But yeah, it's some weird choices like that do take something away from the game as a whole. Because like I said, anytime you want to keep players engaged, anytime you're literally having them stare at the board and not move their characters, not do anything, they just, okay, my turn's over, your turn, all right, thank you, now my turn's over and I didn't do anything, and just going around the table back and forth like that, it's just silly and I feel like missing the point. So I don't know. At the same time, the maps are smaller, enemies are quicker to get at you, but they seem to be overall less dangerous, unless they're Radikar the Wolf, then they're fucking ridiculously dangerous, because your characters can survive longer and so on and so forth. So first impressions wise, as far as, you know, the actual combat mechanics go, everything is streamlined, but not necessarily in a bad way. They've cut a lot of excess fat that was in Blackstone Fortress, where there was a whole lot of, you know, trying to figure out, can this guy actually see this guy or not, and whether or not he is in cover or not, and, you know, so on and so forth. This takes away a lot of that shit, and then you have the, you know, you do have some like special abilities, but they're not as crazy and weird as the Blackstone Fortress. They're not as complicated to the point of it taking too much extra time necessarily. So, but they're pretty comparable, I suppose. Blackstone's abilities for their characters wasn't as bad overall. But there's definitely like a big focus on melee. So there's no cover. Visibility is just, are you in the same tile as the enemy or not? If so, then you can see them. If not, you can't. Unless you're in a board tile and the enemy's standing in another board tile, but right up against the open gateway that attaches your two tiles, or vice versa, you're next to theirs. You know, but otherwise, no, you can't see them. But yeah, there's no measuring ranges for can I do this attack or not? Are they in cover or are they not? You know, they've got 40 different behavior actions, you know, 40,000 different behavior actions, just completely dependent on their, you know, makeup of the squad, etc. So yeah, Blackstone adds a lot more tedium in those regards to the actual combat mechanics in comparison. So but yeah, the actual characters themselves, there's nobody that feels like a complete runaway character, like, oh yeah, this guy you're gonna completely, you know, fuck shit up 24/7. There's no point in picking a different character. Always play this guy. Which I felt like at Blackstone, we had two characters we never used. I did use one of them when we first were playing Esper and Locarno. When we just started off by doing just a one-off expedition, just so we could get a feel for how does this shit work, you know. But beyond that, him and the Kroot tracker guy, I don't remember his name off the top of my head, we didn't end up using either of those characters at all, because they just weren't as valuable as the other characters. Yeah, whereas in Curse City, the all eight characters, they feel very different from each other, but they feel very balanced against each other. At least the ones we've played with so far feel really balanced with the others. So yeah, there's some mild, this guy's a little bit better, or this guy's, you know, a little bit worse than the average. And yeah, so it makes all the characters seem a little more viable overall. Enemies fold like a wet paper bag, it feels like, a lot quicker. Mind you, we're only level zero, so we're not getting a whole lot of crazy shit except for Radicar because of that event thing, and holy fuck. Once again, I'm probably being a little nitpicky here or something, but there's just not as many enemies on the board, so you tend to wipe shit out a lot quicker for the most part. And then that goes back to the cycling back to the main problem of there's nothing to fucking do in the hunt missions for a whole fucking turn or so, if you wipe everybody out. So there are some weird mechanic choices like that. But the actual flow of the game, the actual flow of the combat, the actual combat itself, rather, and stuff, it's all fun. Your journeys, while they are connected in a campaign of sorts, it is not like Blackstone Fortress, where you're drawing these cards that are all connected then and stuff. Instead, you know, once you finish your journey, you all go back to the Adamant, the Sky Vessel. You can spend your Realm Stone currency to buy stuff. But you're not drawing random cards, and that's all you can choose from is one of these three items or whatever. It's just go through the deck, find one you can afford, and it's yours. You don't get to save your Realm Stone, so the game encourages you to get lots of it instead, which is where those scavenge missions come into play. But once again, we haven't played them yet, so I don't know how reliable or how great those missions are and stuff, but still, yeah, but you don't get to keep any of your Realm Stone that you found, so there's actually a drive to just spend it while you can, but also work harder to get more of it, and so on and so forth. But yeah, overall, then the enemy gets totally, you know, or not the enemy, excuse me, your heroes get totally healed. There's no ailments, there's no nothing. So you don't have to have stasis bags to carry a bunch of stuff over. The only thing that's permanent is death. And if you, like, pick up certain items and stuff, you get to keep those until you use them. Empowerments are permanently attached to your character, unless you buy one that replaces one. But otherwise, you're stuck with it. So, yeah, it's, you don't need to have so much bookkeeping like Blackstone Fortress 2, which is something I really like a lot as well. But it still feels like a fleshed out campaign. It doesn't feel like an afterthought or just a mechanism to make you buy more models or some shit. It changes up the dynamic of the campaign as a whole. It makes things, consequences seem less horrifying in many ways, but you can still die. You can still lose characters and stuff. It's just harder overall. So to make it happen. But some missions, failing your missions does feel a lot easier to do compared to Blackstone Fortress, that's for sure. So, but yeah, we're planning to play some more tonight and kind of keep going into it. Oh, and there is an encouragement, too, to switch between the different mission types, because the way that the game determines whether it's winning or not, as opposed to, once again, bookkeeping levels of bullshit with, like, the legacy cards from Blackstone Fortress, here you've just got two separate scores, influence and fear. If either of them reach level 10, then game's over. You're all fucked. You're going to have to start all over. All your characters are dead, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It is a failure, complete and total. So there is encouragement, because one of the mission types lowers influence by 2 points, but increases fear by one. Whether you're successful or not, the fear goes up. In order to lower the 1 by 2 points, you have to be successful. The deliverance missions are the opposite. Yeah, that first one's the hunt missions. The deliverance missions are the opposite. Fear goes down by 2 points, but influence goes up by 1 point. Yeah, if either of them reach 10, level 10, though, you're fucked. And then scavenge, both of them go up 1 point. So, we haven't gotten into the decapitation missions, which is the boss battles and stuff, so I can't comment on how those might have special rules or not that change your influence or fear or whatever. So, haven't gotten to that. So, overall, if you can get your hands on a copy, I think it's worth getting. Oh, one last thing I did want to mention before I wrap it up on that note. So when you're looking at the box and you're looking at the rule book, you get this feeling just the way things are laid out in the box that there's intent for an expansion. Namely, because you have this book that's called the Quest Book. It has all the maps that you play on, all the tables to determine the maps, all the rules for how specific journeys work. Including the decapitations and stuff are all in those in that book. It's all self-contained. And even just the way the front of the book is worded and everything, it makes it kind of obvious that there might be some expansions that add extra quest books. And sure as shit, I don't remember if it's in the rule book or that quest book, but there is a blatant statement where they even specify, I think it's in the rule book, because your characters can hit level 5 is the maximum a character can get to. But it even says that in future expansion releases that there will be other books and stuff, and that, you know, your character, while they max out at level 5, you know, there's a reason to keep them set at level 5 even after you've completed the campaign, because there might be future expansions that give you more levels. So clearly the game was designed to be released and be a full game for a long time. Whether GW is going to come back to that and put out those expansions and everything else, I have no idea. Nobody fucking knows. But as it stands, they had a plan to at least do so. But I think I'm going to call that a call for right now. Once again, Curse City, really good. Highly recommend it. Hard as fuck to find, though. So good luck if you're looking for it. But I do think it's worthwhile. But yes, we're going to wrap this up. As always, you can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast. Follow me on Twitter @RegimentalVox. So, help spread the word. Tell your friends. tell your cat, whoever you need to tell, get them to follow me. So that way I can yell at the internet and in turn yell at more people. So thank you guys for listening. I'll catch you all in the next episode. This is Caleb Meyer signing out for the evening. Have a wonderful week, everyone.